Support for Soundwaves from the Underground is brought to you by 24tix.com, the most convenient way to buy tickets to your favorite local concerts. Save time, save money, rock out. 24tix.com, your ticket to the experience.
The 2014 Sundance Film Festival will be taking place from January 16th through January 26th in Park City, Salt Lake City, Ogden, and at the Sundance Resort. Individual tickets are now available to Utah locals. Visit sundance.org/festival/locals.
I'm Dan Nalen, and this is Soundwaves from the Underground, the official podcast of Slug Magazine in Salt Lake City, Utah. Slug is an acronym for Salt Lake Underground, and it is one of the oldest independent publications in the United States, distributing free monthly issues about music, art, action, sports, and subculture. I've been out of the seat for a while. Isha B's been filling in more than capably, so thank you to her and everyone else. In this episode, we're talking to the Hive Collective, we're talking to professional snowboarder Ryan Hudson, and we get the latest Utah beer news from our resident expert, Mike Riedel. The Hive Collective is a group of artists and musicians based right here in Salt Lake City, and they combine their various talents to throw events all over town. They pool the talents of everyone from filmmakers to DJs, computer programmers, and more to do public events and showcase local talent. The group has become accustomed to making at least monthly events, most recently having an all-ladies DJ night. Slug writer Julia Sack sat down with Rebecca and Dave Gillette, aka DJ DK, to talk about the collective.
You describe yourselves as a group of artists brought together by a love of bass music and art culture. Can you describe yourselves a little more to us?
Sure. We're really like a three-part business. So we do event production and promotion. We have generally a monthly gig, and then we're working towards putting together a music festival, hopefully that will happen sometime in a future summer.
This summer. Let's do it this summer.
So that's one part of the business. The other two parts is we do DJ and talent management for the artists that we represent. And then we also do equipment rentals. So we rent out the sound system that we've invested in.
Well, we have the sound, then we have like visual walls, and we do like 3D projection
screens
mapping.
Screens and projectors, okay, so and all that kind of stuff. Yeah, video, music, and technology is really like our thing.
Okay. So how many artists represent this collective?
DJ-wise, we have 9 artists right now. Which we're working on. There's a couple of the artists that we want to pick up that we generally have been representing people who are local. Some people have stepped out of that and actually started to get a lot larger, which is pretty inspiring and cool to watch, you know. So, yeah. But it is, a lot of it is Utah artist based.
Band Damage is in San Francisco, and he's really started to take off. His career's gone good places.
And and Grimbley is another one who's huge. So he'll find out he's back in when he hears this.
Let's see. Then Tegan is an artist of ours. She's from California originally. We met her when she was living in Park City, and then she went to New York to do audio engineering school at DubSpot. So, and now she's graduated, and she's also working on a fashion line. So we do custom, I do designs for her custom tights and swimsuits and that kind of stuff too. So yeah, it is truly an artist collective.
So it's really kind of grown since then. Did you start out with all of the artists, or have you kind of found them over time?
We started in the event production side first. So for the first few years, we focused just on bringing in out-of-state talent and then providing a place for us to perform so that we had, you know, a way to express. Because he's a DJ, I do visual. And then, you know, from there, our collective just kind of grew with the people that always showed up, always supported, and also, and like, you know, they're really, really talented artists, too. So
Yeah, people cool just, like, kind of gravitated towards us because we were trying and doing what we wanted to do and bringing to the show the elements that were important to us, and people just kind of started taking it upon themselves to start doing their own thing. They would ask to paint live at shows, and it just has kind of gone off from there.
Always tried to include, like, not just music, but art and interactivity too. We recently designed a interactive video wall that with a hat connects, so you can dance in front of it and you create all of the visuals yourself. So yeah, we're definitely always branching out in ways to like connect via music and art technology.
I saw a set by a few of your artists at the Excision concert this spring. I think it was Decay and Heartwreck.
Yep, that would be This Decay.
Yeah, that was me. Yeah.
That was a fun show.
That was a fun show. I wish they would have turned the bass on while we were on, but, you know.
It kind of progressively got louder and louder throughout the night.
They always do that.
And I thought they were using the full bass during, like, the second opener, and then when Excision actually came on, I was a little freaked out.
Yeah.
That, your teeth rattled out of your skull.
That would physically push you. It's amazing.
Oh, yeah.
Our sound camp at Burning Man 1 year made Dave totally toss cookies just from the vibrations. It was like 10 in the morning. Yeah, we are part of the Temple of Boom, and the Rites of Zion has been our camp.
Oh, wow.
We were on the corner, which is like the biggest sound camp area.
I went
this year. 2011, we were on the corner.
Yeah.
And then we went in 2012. We didn't go this last year. Dave and I didn't.
Yeah.
A lot of our other collective was there.
Yeah.
But.
And that year, I mean, we were part of like the Salt Lake City Burning Man community. Jeremy with V2 is the one that really helped push and bring a lot of that sound out. And we were happy to take part in that. It was amazing.
It's so cool to have. We had 108 hours of world-class DJ talent that no producer could ever afford to pay those people to be on that stage.
It's amazing the people they pull that just come out of like.
Yeah.
Well, and nobody got paid. You know, it really is like you just go out there and prove your salt.
Mm-hmm.
It's cool.
Yeah.
Being part of an installation and like we were out there for 12 days and worked every day, all day long, in the heat. It's really intense.
Yeah, it's
managing a stage,
vacation
building a it's the best worst time you'll ever have at Burning Man.
Oh yeah.
For more information on the group, visit them online at thehivecollective.com or at facebook.com/thehive801. Fossil Arms are an experimental synth punk band from right here in Salt Lake City, and if I'm going to listen to synth, I need a little punk with it. This is a perfect group for that. They originally formed in 2010, and they put together their first EP called Tyrannosaurus Flex way back in September of 2012 using a cassette player that they recorded on during a practice session. The group recently released a brand new single called Time for Words back in October this year, and they have plans for some brand new material on the horizon. This is a song called Time for Words. False Alarms will be playing Slug Localized on December 13th at the Urban Lounge, along with Alexander Ortega and the Circulars. The show starts at 9 p.m. and it is a mere $5. To read more about the band, check out the December 2013 issue of Slug Magazine, pick it up anyplace cool, or you can read it online at slugmag.com. And for more information specific to the band, search for False Alarms on Facebook and on Bandcamp. Ryan Hudson is a pro snowboarder who currently lives in Salt Lake City, but he grew up in San Diego and had a tough upbringing, often living in homeless shelters as he was growing up. His life changed when he got involved with a sports outreach program that taught him how to snowboard, and he pursued it as a change in his life. In 2013, Hudson was named as one of the North Face's brand ambassadors. Slug writer Jamie Scott sat down with Hudson to talk about his career.
You have such an amazing story to tell, story that was beautifully captured by the North Face's Outdoor Exploration Ambassador video that came out. Can you explain to some of our listeners who don't know your story or haven't seen the video what got you into snowboarding?
I grew up in Southern California, born and raised in San Diego, and had a pretty rough childhood, grew up homeless my entire life, and then I found a shelter for teenagers that I moved into that kind of allowed me to experience a lot of really cool activities, both indoors and out. Eventually, this guy Chris came into our program with his nonprofit called Outdoor Outreach, which is still standing and running today. Took us up to Big Bear, and I had one day of learning how to ride and had a really cool experience, like being in the mountains and seeing and feeling snow for the first time in my life. And it was a really, really powerful experience for me, and it was a feeling that stuck, and didn't really have an opportunity to experience that again until 2008, when I was at a point where I really needed to try something new, and decided to leave San Diego, and I moved out here for my first winter. It just kind of took off from there.
You emphasize a lot in the video about how snowboarding changed your life. Can you elaborate on this? Sort of what did it give you that you'd been missing?
Growing up, you spend a lot of time, you know, stuck kind of in this bubble of, and not just me, kids, you know, today that are in those types of neighborhoods that are, you know, dominated by gangs and drugs and violence, and you don't get out much, so to speak. And a lot of those kids don't really understand that nature even exists, or that they can fall in love with it, or that, you know, they can live a positive life, you know, being outside. And I was one of those kids that never really felt like being outside was a good thing, because for us, going outside was an opportunity to get jumped or get shot or something like that. It was just trouble for us leaving the house. So even though we were bad kids and we still go outside and do whatever we wanted, but we never felt like, you know, going outside was a positive experience unless we were, you know, with our group of friends, you know, skating or, you know, breaking bottles or doing something, you know, along those lines. And so snowboarding for me gave me an opportunity to kind of fall in love with the world and fall in love with nature and fall in love with, you know, being outside and doing something that is man versus nature rather than man versus man. And snowboarding is this internal battle with, you know, yourself of, you know, how well can you handle, you know, the elements, and progression is all internal, and what you take from that, it's really up to you. And so snowboarding gave me, you know, a love for something that I'd never felt before. And I was able to feel that through skateboarding and through snowboarding, the kind of the two things that have dominated my life recently. And I know that it's kind of an unorthodox way for a kid like me to get out of the hood, as most people would say. And it's a way that, and I've fallen in love with it in a way that most kids who grow up with it don't. And it's not like I use that to kind of better, like to say I'm better than anyone else, but, you know, I feel like it's a very unique position that I've been put in, and it's been a really unique and extraordinary experience for myself, and I'm really glad that I've been able to go through with it and be there.
That's so cool. That's so cool that somebody like Chris could give you that opportunity to see something outside of your reality at that time.
Yeah.
You mentioned earlier in the interview that in 2008 you kind of did a change and you ended up here in Utah. That's a big, that really is a big change from California. What sort of prompted you to make that?
I was kind of at a point in my life where I didn't really have a lot going on. I had graduated high school a year ago, and I spent the entire year skateboarding and using skateboarding as my scapegoat for not getting a real job and not really doing anything positive. I decided not to go to college because I felt it wasn't for me, and so I spent about a year and a half really just kind of coasting on working part-time, supervising at a cafe, making pizza, and using skateboarding as my ticket to a better life. And I eventually realized that that wasn't going to happen. At least it was a lot harder than I thought it would be. And so I was kind of at a pretty low spot in my life where I was just kind of sleeping on a friend's couch and just kind of living day to day, and realized I wasn't happy doing that. And so I went to Chris one day and let him know, like, hey, my life kind of sucks right now, and I'm not happy with what I'm doing, and I'm not at all where I want to be, and I don't think what I'm doing right now is going to get me there. I need to make a change. I need to do something, you know, whether it be little or completely drastic. And he told me about coming out here, and he's like, you know, I spent, you know, about 8 years living and working up at Alta, and I got to ski every day, and I washed dishes, and, you know, worked at this lodge. And I was like, awesome, let's do it, you know, sign me up. And so he went with it, and I hardly said goodbye to most of my friends and family, but luckily got to talk to my mom about it a little bit just before I left, and you know, she was pretty supportive of it. So Chris bought me a plane ticket and gave me a few dollars and sent me on my way, and I landed here.
You know, you're notoriously known as a snowboarder, and Alta is known for being a ski-only resort. Was it weird to be a snowboarder surrounded by loads of skiers?
There was kind of a double whammy there. One, being a snowboarder and being in Alta, and two, being a black guy living in Alta, were two pretty, let's just say I wasn't hard to miss. But it was a great experience, and a lot of the skiing community up there was, you know, very inviting, and it was a really cool crowd to hang out with, and you know, poaching the mountain was always fun to do, and we got a lot of support and backing from that. And over the years, you know, I spent 3 seasons living and working up there. Every year there was an increase in the amount of snowboarders that would come and live up there. So nowadays there's, you know, Alta's no strangers to their snowboarders.
Have you tried skiing?
I have tried skiing, and I've had a lot of fun doing it. And but, you know, it's just something I don't feel like I could spend a lot of time doing or put in a ton of effort. But it's definitely fun on those days when you get a group of us that, hey, let's go skiing today. And you'll just see a bunch of snowboarders in baggy, steezy clothes out there trying to ski. It's pretty funny.
In 2010, you nabbed the North Face Masters Young Gun Award. What was that like?
It was insane. Being my first competition, and kind of just, I kind of rolled the dice and wanting to try to compete, even though, you know, I'd been out here for 2 years and don't feel like I was at all on any level of any of the other riders that were there. And there were a lot of big names there, Pat Moore and JP Tomich and Travis Rice was there, and it was an insane event. And but I felt like, you know, if I could just do this and, like, you know, stay on my feet and get from top to bottom without killing myself, you know, I'll be okay. Like, I didn't plan to do, you know, any big tricks or anything like that. Just kind of wanted to do it for myself and challenge myself just to kind of see where I was at. And yeah, it turned out to be a really good day, and you know, and placed 17th, and kind of shocked myself and shocked, you know, a lot of my friends who also thought, you know, I'll just go out there and try my hardest. And you know, it turned out, you know, 89 men, I landed in 17th place. I think it was a pretty insane and a remarkable experience for me, and a really, really crazy day overall. It's still kind of a blur.
For more information on Hudson, check out planetexplore.com/Ryan_Hudson. This is your weekly daily calendar for the week beginning on December 9th and running through December 15th. And as always, I encourage you to go to slugmag.com every damn day of your week. Check out all the listings on there. There is always quality new events being added from all over Utah. I know you'll find stuff that's right up your alley, as I do every time I look. Let's start on Tuesday, December 10th. Midlake and Sarah Jaffe are playing together at Urban Lounge. Great indie rock show. It's going to be one of the best of December. I guarantee it. I've seen Midlake a couple times. Really good stuff. On Thursday, December 12th, Band of Heathens out of Texas bring a little of that roots rock style that I personally love so much. They're playing at the Stateroom. That'll be a great night out. Then on Friday, December 13th, it's Slug Localized with the Circulars, Fossil Arms, and our very own Alexander Ortega on the mic. That's at Urban Lounge, a mere $5. Great way to catch up on some quality local tunage. Saturday, December 14th, a big-ass comedy show out at the Maverick Center. George Lopez, formerly known as a really funny stand-up comic, then known as the guy who got bumped off the air when Conan O'Brien came to town. He's back out there touring. Pretty quality stand-up, and he's playing with Brian Kellen, who's a really funny cat. That should be a pretty good show. Same night, Saturday the 14th, over at the Lo-Fi Cafe, a relatively new entity in town. Lots of hard rock for you. Turn to Stone, Visigoth, Moon of Delirium, and Huldra all playing together at the Lo-Fi Cafe. On Sunday, December 15th, 10th anniversary open house at Le Madeleine, one of our best bakeries. Go get yourself a Coingamon, hang out, chit-chat, support some local business. It's a great opportunity to do just that. And then on Monday, December 16th, basically a local, even though he doesn't live here, but he's been playing here for, God, 20 years. Jerry Joseph, headlining a show at the Stateroom. Former Slug founder J.R. Ruppel, probably playing with him, I would hazard a guess. That should be a fun show. As always, your weekly daily calendar is just a smidge of what's available at slugmag.com. Go on there, check out the other events. For a mere $5 a month or $50 a year, you can add quality content to our free event option that allows you to put your own events in there. So be sure to check that out every day of the week. The Circulars are a four-piece rock band from right here in Salt Lake City that originally formed just earlier this year, back in April, comprised of Sam Burton, Maxwell Ijams, Diana Durfee, and Kathy Foy. The band spent much of the year putting together their debut self-titled EP, which was just released this fall back in September. This is a song called My Friend from the Circulars' self-titled debut. Circulars are playing Slug Localized on December 13th at the Urban Lounge, along with Fossil Arms and Alexander Ortega. The show starts at 9 p.m. and it's just $5. To read more about the band, check out the December issue of Slug Magazine, available anyplace cool, or read it on slugmag.com. And for more information on the group, visit them at facebook.com/thecirculars, and you can find them on Bandcamp as well. We are here with Mike Riedel, resident beer expert, whose reviews you can read every month in Slug Magazine. Mike, thank you for coming down to our frosty beer container confines of the Slug Mag studio.
This is actually the perfect place to store beer.
Isn't it? I know. We got to start doing that so we always have a cold one ready to pop whenever you're in here. We're going to get into some of the new stuff going on around town. But before we do that, this is going to be airing here in mid-December, right around there. Any seasonal favorites of your personal, just, you know, not necessarily new things, but, you know, Christmas time hits, is there a beer, is there a go-to beer for you at the holidays or New Year's Eve, anything like that?
It's usually the one that's right in front of me.
the one that somebody brings to you as you sit in your chair?
Or, yeah. You know, the Bayou gets in a lot of interesting seasonals that are usually from the UK or from Denmark.
Ah.
And I always look forward to those because they're always very different and a lot different than some of the stuff that we normally get here. Yeah, so
that's pretty cool.
So I wouldn't say there's any one, but there's a lot of interesting holiday beers out right now that are really worth looking out for.
Well, let's get into those. Let's hear about it. Why don't we start? You mentioned one from Red Rock here.
So we have, there are two seasonals out right now. One is their Griswold Holiday Ale. And this is it's a spice beer, basically. It is full of holiday spices. Everything you come to associate with the holidays, they cram into this beer. It's a malty beer, and it's got a lot of allspice and cinnamon and nutmeg. And it's a really festive beer. It comes out once a year, and it changes.
A little slightly, depending on how much of the whatever spice
some
they
years,
throw in.
Yeah, some years are spicier than others. This year is it's a little more subtle. Okay. It's not as in your face.
Is this a beer that you would sit and, you know, pound a sixer of, or is it more like kind of a...
No, that's one thing about holiday beers. That's one thing about holiday beers. They tend to be a little on the boozy side.
Yeah, right. Yeah. High point, high impact.
Winter warmers, yeah. So they're gonna warm the cockles.
Okay.
One that they've made, this is the third year they've made this beer. It's called Sakale, which is Latin for rye.
Oh.
And this beer is, at its base, a Bock, a German-style lager.
Yeah.
And that's a very malty beer to begin with. You add the rye, which is not typically made with this beer. It adds a little bit of a spiciness. Mm. Not like hot spicy, but rye is just a very spicy
malt. It's
got some
flavor, yeah.
And then what they did was they took and paired the rye in the malt with High West's rye whiskey. So what they did is they took this and they aged it 6 months in High West rye whiskey.
Uh-huh.
So you've got this pairing of whiskey and beer that is just incredible. Now, I love this beer. You were asking me if there's a beer that I really look forward to.
This
would be the one.
Now that you mentioned that, I was just out of state. Sadly, it was out of state, but I sampled a beer like that that had been, it was a rye beer that had been aged in whiskey barrels. Mm-hmm. I think it was from Oregon. I can't remember. It was either Oregon or Washington State or something, and it was pretty damn good. And I was just like a curiosity seeker, like, I like whiskey. I like beer.
Why not?
Wow! This works! Amazing!
And one of the great things is, this is an all-local beer.
Yeah.
All local distillery, local brewery.
Awesome.
And... plus, I don't know if you've had that High West rye. It is awesome.
Oh, I love that stuff. Yeah. So Sakale. Sakale? Am I saying it? Sakale.
Some people say Sakale. I say Sakale.
Look for the label or ask for it by name.
Right.
And it's, give me that rye whiskey beer, and they'll know what you're talking about, I'm guessing, at Red Rock.
You're going to love that one.
That sounds awesome.
I think that was only available at the brewery.
Oh, okay.
So you can buy it at the brewery or the brew pub.
Oh, great. All right, that's good info to have. What Squatters got going there?
Squatters has put out remember last year that was Alta's 75th birthday. Wasatch did a anniversary beer for them.
Yeah.
And that was basically a pale ale. What Squatters did, they did a bottled beer. Well, it was originally a draft beer that went on for Oktoberfest. It's a Dunkelweizen. And this is basically a wheat beer made with some darker malts. And that's basically what Dunkelweizen means.
Okay.
Dark wheat beer. It was a hit at Oktoberfest. Now it's in bottles, and it's just a beer for Snowbird. For their customers for everybody, for all us locals.
All of us who live here.
Yeah. You can get it in grocery stores. It's 4%.
Nice.
It's a nice, good representation on the style. Banana, clove, little slight chocolatey notes from the darker malt.
Oh, wow.
Really nice beer.
Yeah, that sounds holiday and festive, too. Nice. That sounds pretty good.
And speaking of anniversary beers.
Yeah, and Wasatch.
Mm-hmm. This is Park City Resort's golden anniversary. This year, or actually next year. And so Wasatch has made an anniversary beer for Park City.
Nice.
And this is a nice beer. It's basically called Park City Golden Anniversary Ale. And this one, different from the Alta beer, which was a pale ale, this is more of a brown ale.
Oh, okay.
And it's got a nice hop character, which is not common for the style, but it's a really nice, easy drinking beer. 4% also. So you'd pretty much be able to find it anywhere.
Great.
And as of this recording, it just got bottled a couple days ago, so
should be out and about.
And
available. I love a brown ale, too.
A fresh beer is a great beer.
Yeah, nice. Excellent. And then it looks like up Ogden way, Roosters has something new, too.
This is one of the weirdest beers I've come across in a while. And it's a simple beer.
And that is saying something.
It's a simple beer.
Who samples his way around.
It's called Hopfner. And when I first had it, it's made with oregano.
Oh.
And some different hops. But when I first had it, all I could think of was pizza.
Yeah, right?
It tastes like pizza.
Has a flavor.
It has that, oregano is heavy in the sauce.
Thyme and stuff, yeah.
And I was just like, what am I tasting? And it's like, oh, yeah, duh, it's pizza. And it's not awful, but it's kind of weird. It's like...
You're not automatically like, gulp, 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 gulp.
Yeah, it's almost like you're getting into almost Bloody Mary territory,
okay.
Where it's not that spicy. It's not as rich and spicy as a Bloody Mary, but it's not what you would expect from a beer.
From a beer in general.
Oregano is a weird choice, and I've done some research on these, and they're kind of popular around the country.
Interesting.
You're just gonna have to try it.
Yeah. It might be.
I can give you that descriptor, oregano, pizza.
It's going to be an acquired taste for people who might acquire it.
Like breadsticks. Breadsticks with a little oregano on it. That's what I would call it.
Okay. Hopfner.
So, Hopfner.
From Roosters.
And that's Roosters in Ogden and Layton.
Yep, that's right. And I really like Roosters beer, so I'll give that a sample sometime when I'm up there in O-Town.
And I think the Beer Hive's pouring it right now.
Oh, all right.
So
hey,
you won't have to go too far.
Lovely.
So check that one out.
Hopfner.
And let me know what you guys think, because I don't know what to think of it.
Yeah, I'm still mulling that over, right? But you've eaten a lot of pizza since you've had that beer. It gave me the craving.
The thing that everybody else has been cooing over.
For a long time.
Everybody's been bitching and moaning about this beer not being available, or beers, I should say. The new Belgians are finally here.
Woo!
And how long has it taken to get these damn beers in?
A hell of a long time.
So you'll be happy to know that they are for sale right now. They're popping up. You should be able to find them in liquor stores right now.
Go get your fat tire on. Go get your various.
Yeah, at first, only the specialty beer bars had them.
Yeah.
They started with Fat Tire, of course.
Yeah.
With its special Utah label and Accumulation White IPA.
Oh. Hmm.
And this is one of their seasonals.
Okay.
And it's nice to get a seasonal fresh right off the bat.
Yeah, totally.
And I think we've talked about white IPAs before, but they're basically Belgian wit style beers
with a little
American hop,
right? A little of that hop kick
attitude,
right?
And that's basically what you've got. So,
all right.
And there are more coming, and it's just beginning.
Yeah, now that the door's open, they can drop anything they
want. Special orders, the DABC is going to be really tight on what they get, but the specialty bars have already got others in. Just over at the Beer Hive last week, Dell got in the New Belgian Cigar City collaboration, which is, it's, I can't remember, it's weird. It's got some weird...
It's New Belgian's version of the Hopfner.
It's not anything that extreme. It's a nice drinking beer. Hop Kitchen, fresh hop. Now, Hop Kitchen is their kind of...
Experimental lab.
It's their IPA kind of line. And the fresh hop, nice drinking, light IPA. I think it's around 6%.
Yeah.
This is a beer best fresh, so they're out now. Go over there and get some.
It's get really them while nice. Getting's good, yeah.
The Rampant IPA, double IPA, similar version, a little bit more boozy, a little bit more bitter.
Yeah.
They're Belgian Abbey, classic Abbey style, lots of candy sugar, coriander, it's a little bit peach, and it's a little boozy also. The triple, the same, lots of candy sugar, sweet banana, very sweet actually. Hmm. It's a fairly sweet beer.
Like, yeah, have one.
Yeah, and it's a boozy, hence the name Triple, because it's triple fermented.
Yeah, yeah.
And the last one is the Wild Wild Double, which is a double, Belgian double style, and they've made it with funky yeast, Brettanomyces, which will give it a little barnyard, horse blanket.
That's what I'm looking for.
it's weird. And when you try it, you'll go, it's like, yeah, this is a little weird.
There's hay or something, notes of hay.
Yeah. But it adds, over time, a nice tartness, and the funk gives it a really nice character.
Nice.
And
we're gonna get spoiled with all these new goodies coming from those guys. It's gonna be awesome. It's a new day.
It's a good time to be a beer lover.
Right. That's right. And yeah, I love it. I love all the stuff our local breweries do. Love it when we get an out of towner who's new to the scene to drop a bunch of goodies on us too. It's awesome. Mm-hmm.
And this I just found out yesterday. There's a new distillery opening up in Salt Lake City.
Gavin and I were just talking about distilleries. What's this one?
Sugar House Distilling. And it's opening up they're supposed to get their state permit. They already got their federal permit. They're supposed to get their state permit in a couple of weeks. And hopefully they'll be distilling by January 1st.
Ooh.
And they'll be starting with a vodka. And after that, they'll be doing a honey whiskey.
Oh, all right.
And that's coming, and
that's,
I believe,
exciting news.
They're on West Temple and about 2200 South.
Hey, so okay, they're down there in like the Pat's barbecue neighborhood, yep. And the trolley line will be able to haul everyone's drunken asses up and down and around
exactly.
That neighborhood. It's perfect. That's my neighborhood. Awesome. That's great.
So
a distillery in walking distance. Sold.
So we're talking new stuff. I thought I'd throw that.
That is new and exciting, and right after the beginning of the new year, maybe. So that's sweet. That's
great,
good stuff.
Great way to start 2014.
Awesome. Mike, thanks so much for the lowdown. That's breaking news, people, right here. As always, you can find Mike's stuff at utahbeer.blogspot.com and his reviews every month in Slug's beer review section. Mike, thanks so much. We will see you soon again.
Thank you, Dan.
Thank you for listening to Soundwaves from the Underground. And for all things Slug Magazine, be sure to visit us online at slugmag.com. Next week, we're going to have Jeffrey Stedman of Yelp Utah back in the studio to talk about Utah's best bakeries. And we'd like to know if you have any questions for Jeffrey or if you have any favorites in Utah's baking community that you want us to know about. You can either send us an email to soundwaves@slugmag.com or call and leave us a message on our automated voicemail line at 858-233-9324. That line is open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. We just might play your suggestion and or your question on the show. This podcast was created by Slug Magazine and produced by Gavin Sheehan. The associate producers are Esther Moronio, Alexander Ortega, and myself, Dan Nalen. The executive producer is Angela H. Brown. The theme was performed by Lindsay Heath and Mike Sasich. Main logo and art design is by T-Done, and the technical design is by Kate Colgan. Be sure to fire us up again next week, where we'll be talking to the folks from the David Fetzer Foundation. We'll be talking to Jeffrey Stedman about Utah's bakeries. And we'll talk to the good people behind Roach Clip Records.